Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. My name is Julie Perchinski, and this is Garden Life on the Morning Show. Our show today is titled June in the Garden. And in the studio this morning, our guests are Diane Green and Elizabeth Struby to talk about what's happening in their June gardens. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. I'd like to take a minute at first to talk about our community radio celebration all of last week, culminating in a live broadcast at the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint on Saturday. Thanks to the conservatory for giving us the venue. Thanks to all the musicians for donating their time and talent, and to all the people who support KRFY. It was a great event, and I hope everybody had fun at that. Beginning, I'd like to introduce a frequent guest on the morning shows. She's co-owner of Green Tree Naturals with her husband, Tom. She's an educator, a mentor, a leader in the organic movement, consults on Idaho's organic guidelines, and much, much more we'll hear about in the next hour. Welcome to Diane Green. Thanks for coming in, Diane.
Good morning. Thanks for having me in.
And our other guest I met at the library's Natural Connections event at her presentation about seed saving and starting plants, Master Gardener Elizabeth Struby. Thank you, Elizabeth, for coming in.
Thank you.
And I didn't mention you're also an author.
Yes.
Yes. Excited to hear about that as well. So as an introduction, let's take a trip through your gardens, beginning with a description. Diane, tell us what your gardens look like.
Well, we have an acre garden, which is a bit of a challenge sometimes, since my husband and I are both in our 70s, but right now we are planting furiously. We use a lot of season extensions, so we're planting inside our hoop houses. We have 6 hoop houses and a high tunnel, so we're transplanting into those right now. We have 5 different kinds of broccoli in the ground, 5 different kinds of cabbage in the ground, kale, the couple different kinds of shallots are looking fantastic. The garlic is, it might be some of the biggest garlic we've had in 35 years. It's 3 feet tall. The garlic just thrived in the cold winter months. But with the rain, you know, this cool rain is mostly great for transplanting. It's harder on the gardeners and the farmers than it is on the plants for the most part. But we've got a long ways to plant. We pretty much we start our seedlings with the thought of planting Memorial Day and beyond. We don't do a lot of transplanting before that. So we're right on target for where we usually are, and we'll be planting and transplanting nonstop for the rest of June.
And you have fruit trees as well?
We have a small orchard, just mm-hmm. some plums and Asian pears and a couple of peaches, a couple of apples, not much, just enough for us. But we also grow strawberries and blueberries and goji berries and hascaps and aronia berries, and so we're pretty diversified with the different things that we grow, but it's moving right along.
Super. Elizabeth, give us a picture of your garden.
So my garden is just a tenth of an acre, and I say just, but that's a lot larger than a lot of people are working with. It's a lot of space when you're just one person. I have 30 raised beds, and I also grow a lot of perennials. I'm a few weeks later than up here in town. I'm in the Kokalala area, and I'm in a little bit of a snow belt. I did not put out tomatoes last year until the third week of June.
Oh.
And I still have my tomatoes kind of in and out of the greenhouse right now because we've had nighttime temperatures in the low to mid-30s, and I haven't seen a day above 62 in 3 weeks. So we're a little bit behind, but I feel like that's on par for me too. Sometimes I don't put out warm weather crops until the first week of June. So
Sure. Let's get into the specifics here. So what happened through the winter? Did you have loss through the winter? Diane, you mentioned that garlic is kicking it out.
Well, garlic always thrives in the cold anyways. That's why North Idaho grows great garlic. Mm-hmm. But we did lose some things, like our rugosa rose, which is just becomes a overpowering as far as a growth, really died back a lot. And we saw some die back on our grapes. We grow table grapes and juicing grapes as well. And you can see on some of the grapes that are like 40 years old, they are just sprouting out from where the snow cover was. Because we had minus 27 at our place this winter. So there are some things, and like the elderberries died back to the ground, but they're coming back, from the roots. So we see some damage, and that's to be expected with that. I mean, those plants are adapting to whatever the cold brings.
Sure.
I'm a little more sheltered from the wind. We only got down to negative 19, but I lost a rose bush as well. Everything else seemed like it's doing pretty good.
Yes, I wondered if you heard about Green Bluff losing their peach crop.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Their peach crop and their cherries. The cherries really got hit in town, and it's pretty serious this year what mm-hmm. took a hit. And my roses went down as well. I've never cut my roses to the ground before, ever. And I have a garden in town, so.
There, I don't know if you guys are on the North Idaho local gardening forum, but it's a Facebook page, and people have been talking a lot about losing arborvitas and rose bushes and grapes, and it's just, those were some wild temperatures.
Yes, they were.
Well, we're also bringing in all these plants that come from other places that are adapting to our environment, and it's natural that some things are just not going to make it.
That's and things have a lifespan as well.
Buying for your zone is really important too, or buying below your zone even, because we can experience winter temperatures that exceed what we're expecting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's a good reason why it's important to support locally grown plant starts when you can, because those local growers are typically growing what they know to be tried and true, hopefully.
That's a good point. Did you both start all your plants then?
Yes.
Yeah, we have a 100-foot commercial size greenhouse, and we custom grow for, which just means we people do pre-orders, and we grow for them, and then we grow all our own transplants as well. So we have thousands going and at one point. But thinning out. We had our plant sale, so yay. And people picked up their custom orders, so happy to have that moving along.
Yes. That's a relief, isn't it, when you finally pass them on?
It sure is.
I do a little bit of the same thing. I start my plants in my attic, and I usually sell anywhere from 500 to a couple thousand seedlings a year. This year was really slow. I normally just sell them on Facebook, and I had hardly any orders, but I've started my entire garden from seed since the very first year, which was 2019 on this mm-hmm. property.
I think the weather influences people's, you know, desire to buy plants. It seems like it's a slow start all over.
And everybody wanted them early this year, too, I felt like, because the weather got so nice, and they're like, how big are your tomatoes? I'm like, they're like an inch tall. What?
No, I won't let people take plants early.
No.
It's
and they'll hound you about it.
Not so much, but most of them have been with me for a while, and they know I know what I'm talking about, so they do listen. I'm happy to have that respect.
I learned something new this year, and you talking about how you haven't planted all your garden yet, the difference between optimum and minimum temperature. I don't know why it didn't click in my brain, but just because it says minimum doesn't mean it's going to germinate well.
And maximum temperature, too.
No, it's really important to use, in my workshops on the farm, I encourage everyone to get a soil thermometer and use it. And when you have a soil thermometer, you're just able to keep track of what's going on. And it makes a difference. I mean, we use soil temperature for our planting, direct seeding and transplanting all the time. And a tip with using a soil thermometer, always put flagging on it so you don't lose it. Something bright, because they get lost in the garden.
And I also read that You're supposed to go 2 inches deep on that soil thermometer.
You want to go where the root zone is.
Yes.
Well, I temp at 4 inches.
Okay.
And that's, I think that's the best way to do planting in this climate, especially.
Go that deep?
Mm-hmm.
You want to go as deep as the plants that you're planting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have a hard time with carrots germinating, especially this year. Is it because it's too cold? Or?
Maybe.
Hard to say. Bad seed?
Maybe.
Do you have a secret with carrots? Do you put sand with them and sprinkle them around or just...
No, I just use a little hand seeder and sprinkle them along. Mm-hmm. I have made my own seed tape, but you can get, I think you can get pelletized mm-hmm. carrot seed, just like you can get pelletized lettuce seed, and that makes it a lot easier so you can see more of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
My issue has been keeping them moist, and I just have to babysit them because my soil dries out really, really quickly.
Okay. Good drainage.
Yes, mm-hmm. I do have good drainage, which is good, mm-hmm. but keeping seeds moist when they're trying to germinate, and I think carrots especially like to be really moist. I've heard of people, I just babysit them, but I've heard of people putting burlap mm-hmm. over the top mm-hmm. of carrots until they start to sprout and then pulling it.
That might have been it. It got hot that the mm-hmm. 2 weeks after I planted that first time, and I'm sure I didn't keep it wet enough.
And even though we consider carrots to be a cool season crop, they do have, talking about that optimum temperature, they have a little bit higher optimum germination temperature than a lot of the other things you're planting at the same time.
Right. And successive planting, thinning, replanting, transplanting. How do you have a big planner up to keep you on track with those things?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Planning is the only way we can manage an acre garden and manage growing all that we do. So succession planning, a lot of times I will, for example, direct seed lettuce, but I will also start some in the greenhouse and transplant out. So I have direct seeded and transplanted together, which is in essence meeting that succession needs. But
yes,
we'll do that with beets as well, direct seed and transplant. So
if my seeds come up really thick, I'll thin in the row and kind of fill in the blanks and try and fill a row that's spotty mm-hmm. or whatever. That seems to work pretty good.
With carrots too?
No, not carrots. Okay. Beets and
right.
lettuces and
yep.
onions, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever comes up too thick, which is usually most everything. And thinning. How do you feel about thinning? Is it something that's important, or is it something that you can kind of let go?
Well, the everything needs room to grow. If you, it depends on what it is. I mean, for lettuces, I see a lot of people planting in, they just sprinkle the seed out and have mass lettuce, and as they harvest, they'll harvest every other plant and go with that, and that's an certainly one way of doing it, but if you want healthier plants and less pest stress, they need space to grow.
Sure.
Do you plant more intensively, or do you do more of a traditional spacing?
A little bit of both.
I plant really intensively, and I experiment a lot with multi-sowing and not thinning, and thinning some things and transplanting some things. It's really fun to experiment with.
Sure. See what works at your place.
Yes, and I was going to say about the succession planting, there are all kinds of charts and stuff online for people who are just starting with garden planning. There are spreadsheets and printable templates and stuff that you can schedule. You know, I need to sow carrots every 14 or 30 days to have a successive harvest, or you can look up what is good to plant in a space that you just pulled your lettuce out of because it bolted, or pulled your spinach out of because it bolted. All kinds of resources online.
Good. Good. And tell us a little bit about your book.
Yes, I just put out a garden planner, and it's just basically a blank template kind of planner. You can get it in printed or digital format, and it is a calendar of your entire gardening year, but it also has reference charts for ideal soil temperatures and succession planting charts and how many plants to put in for your family and suggested spacing and whatnot. That is on my website. I run a little blog.
Okay.
That's kind of what Diane over here is, the organic gardening guru. I just have a blog.
She's got a fantastic web presence as well.
Yes.
With the Green Tree Natural webpage. Even though we've already kind of started our garden, give us some ideas on how to save seed. Whenever I go to a book or a guide, the first thing it says usually is that the author regrets not saving seeds when they first started gardening, and that's me. That's the way I am. So what's the difference between biennials and annuals when you save seed?
Well, annual seed is the plant's life cycle, and seed production takes place in one season.
Mm-hmm.
And biennial, it takes 2 years to reach maturity for making seeds. So.
Okay.
And, for example, some biennials include carrots and onions, brassicas like cabbage, and Brussels sprouts. They will come up in fruit in the first year, and then the next year they will put out a flower and produce seeds. So they actually have to make it through the winter.
Although with some biennials, like we grow, for example, our own beets, and a lot of those things will not overwinter out in the field, but we will set aside beets, and we have a walk-in cooler because we were growing commercially for a long time, and I'll just store those beets in the walk-in cooler, and then in the spring, and I've done that with carrots as well, just stored them over winter and then put them back in the ground, and that will be our seed crop for the following year. And you can do cabbage, sometimes will overwinter as well, so there are some things that you can do
for
biennial crops. But
and that's similar to how you store garlic and potatoes and put them in cold storage for the winter and then put them back in to grow the second year.
But I think for people that are doing beginner vegetable seeds, good to think about first time seed saving, maybe doing beans or lettuce, peas, peppers, tomatoes. Those vegetables are really good for a beginner seed saver.
Flowers, too, usually are pretty easy and really fun.
Sure. Flowers go all over the garden on their own, usually. How do you choose which seeds to save, and what about the isolation of those plants? Explain how you do that.
Well, it really depends on what we save seed from a lot of things, but we also save seed and grow for a seed co-op, Snake River Seeds in Southern Idaho. So it's a little different doing commercial seed saving than home seed saving. So we've been saving, for example, snow peas. We started saving 15, 18 years ago. And in doing so, we now have a snow pea that is heat tolerant. And typically snow peas are toast. They're done producing by the end of June. And our snow peas will go through August because they've adapted. And that's one of the reasons why, ideally for saving seed, is you're saving something that is very specific to your growing environment, and it's adapted to the changes in your growing environment. And with that, we have a heat tolerant variety where if we're growing seed for the seed company, we have to have a minimum of 20 or 30 plants of one variety to save, so we have seed diversity for that. So I think for a home gardener, you can do all kinds of things.
Yeah, and on my end, being more of a home gardener, basically what I look for is something that has performed really well and has traits that I'm looking for. And I look for if I can isolate pollination if I need to. A lot of home gardeners might not need to if they're only growing one or two types of tomatoes or one type of lettuce. You might not need to isolate pollination. But I look for a fruit or a plant that has the best qualities, and then I save that seed to set the next generation up for success.
Explain the isolation.
I want to throw in there, too, that you always want to save seed from the healthiest plants there. You don't want to be saving seed from something that's weak or struggling.
And that's really hard because when you see the absolute best-looking tomato, you might just want to pluck it and eat it right there out in the garden, but it might be your best candidate for saving the strongest seed stock.
So we go around with flagging. I mm-hmm. have flagging, and oftentimes with my husband and I out there for seed saving, he'll look at a tomato and go, that's the one I'm going to save, and he won't mark it, and I'll go and pick it later. So we both keep some bright yellow or red flagging with us and flag the things that we're going to save seed, because we'll look at it and then we'll go, that's the one I want to pick, and then we'll forget. So flagging what you want to save is a really important thing to do.
Because, yes, I've got a carrot that came up from last year that I'm flagging to make sure nobody pulls it or anything, because that's going to be my seed mm-hmm. for this year.
Yeah, and isolation for pollination basically is, and like you said, when you're starting out with seed starting, lettuce, flowers, tomatoes, and peppers, marigolds, legumes, things that are self-pollinating, and they have a bunch of charts online to look for pollination basics as well. But when you're looking for something to start with, if it's self-fertile, is going to be safer as a generation down will be true to the parent plant. If something gets cross-pollinated in the garden, like a squash can get cross-pollinated really easily, even if you have something that looks like an acorn squash and you save the seed from it, if it got cross-pollinated with a pumpkin,
right,
the next year that you plant that seed, you can end up with some really wacky, like Franken squash.
Right.
It happens all the time.
And the same with, like, we grow snow peas for the seed company. We have to make sure that when we're planting our garden, that seed crop for snow peas is at least 100 feet away from the sugar snap peas. Mm-hmm. And even then, on occasion, when I go to plant the following year, I might have a row of snow peas from that seed source, but I might have a couple sugar plants in there that become a sugar snap because they did cross-pollinate. Mm-hmm. So there is a distance that you need to allow for a lot of things. But you can, if you can't isolate, you can cover them, you can net them, you can cage them with netting. So there's some things that you can do you can also just make it a crapshoot, and it's exciting to see what you end up with.
Sure. I was going to say, if you're a home gardener and you're not as worried about producing viable seed for other people, you can just see what happens, and that can be really fun.
Sure. The compost pumpkin.
Yes. Exactly.
Compost tomato.
Yeah.
You never know what it becomes.
But if you're a market gardener, and we have a lot of great market gardeners that are a lot of people that are growing and want to know exactly what they have, then you want to be a little more conscientious about what you're collecting. So
sure.
You do know what you have.
Right, right. So the interesting thing to me is that, so those seeds that grow in your garden that you save and grow and grow and save and grow and save become their own seed. They're a completely different seed. So do you get credit for that seed when you sell to, like, Snake River, or...
We have, it becomes intellectual property.
Okay.
So for, like, with Snake River, with our summer snow pea is what we named it. We got to name it because it was our own. And I have first dibs for growing and selling it to them every year.
Oh. And is it copyrighted or
not seeds? You
like
don't really
that.
Copyright.
Okay.
It's more, and there's a lot of things going around with that as far as commercial seed production, but mostly it's intellectual property.
Okay.
Big companies like Burpee will patent seeds, and they're actually patented seeds generally aren't exchanged or stocked in the library. And you guys talked about that mm-hmm. a little bit before the Natural Connections event with Kelly.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I like the flagging the plants, because a lot of times people will come through and pick their favorite thing, and there it goes, that plant you were saving. Can families cross-pollinate with each other? Well, you said squash can.
Mm-hmm.
What about broccoli and cabbage, or broccoli and cauliflower? They can all cross-pollinate with each other?
Well, we grow 5 different types of broccoli. And broccoli is one of those that I have one heirloom variety. The rest of them are all hybrids that we grow. So I don't save seed from that. And they're hybrids because I want a specific trait, which is heat tolerance. So the broccoli we grow is all heat tolerant, so I can be harvesting we'll start harvesting the end of June and be harvesting through September.
Wow, that is heat tolerant.
So then that kind of goes into the open pollinated versus hybrid, and you really need to know what you're saving from. Not to say that you can't save from a hybrid, you just don't know what you're going to get.
Right, right. And that's buying seed from a reputable seed company.
Yes.
Yes.
Right, right.
Okay, let's talk about your progress of your garden right now. Are you fertilizing, and what with?
We foliar feed once a week this time of year. We when we go to transplant, we add compost and an organic fertilizer, and then once the seedlings are in the ground, we do a foliar feeding of fish emulsion, kelp, and worm leachate. We have several large worm bins, so we collect that. We get about 60 gallons of worm leachate from our worm bin every year, and that's what I fertilize all my seedlings in the greenhouse with. As far as foliar feeding, all that means is that I'm mixing it up in a watering can, and we walk along and water everything that's in the ground. It gets foliar fed once a week. We will do that through the end of June.
Now, that compost, is that like a tea, your worm casings?
No, the worm leachate is leachate. Not worm tea, and they're two different things, and so no.
Oh, okay. My comfrey all went down with the rain yesterday, so I'm going to cut it and make a tea out of that. That's a good tea.
It is. I have a worm bin also. I just started a couple of years ago, and we fish, so we harvest the worms out of it, which is great, but I put the leachate on everything. It's awesome. And the foliar, you actually spray on the leaves, and the leaves take it in, as opposed to putting it around the bottom of the plant. It can be like an instant, like, smoothie shot for those plants. And we, on our property, we're raising rabbits for meat. We just got into that last summer. And I had read about how good rabbit manure was for the garden, but I didn't fully understand it until this year, because I put in thousands of dollars of this soil that I got from a nursery that was supposed to be really great, and it ended up being just horribly compacted,
ooh,
completely bereft of any organic material. So I had to start over with my soil biome when I put in my entire 3,600 square foot garden. I couldn't grow a carrot 2 years ago.
Oh, no.
It was horrid. So I caught the rabbit manure, and the difference between last year and this year and working in that rabbit manure in the winter and then top dressing with it this year is just like night and day.
Wow.
I'm a huge proponent of poop.
And you have to feed the soil. And we just had a fertilizing organically workshop on the farm last weekend. And one of the things that I stress with my students is the soil is alive and the soil needs to be fed. And it's a concept that is new for a lot of people. When you think about it, if you think of the soil as being alive and you think of the fact that everything is alive needs to be fed, well, I often hear people say, well, my garden just did great last year and it's not doing so great this year. And it's like, well, what did you feed it? And they go, well, I fed it last year. Well, how much did you feed it? Well, I gave it a cup of fertilizer in June on a 8x14 foot bed. I said, well, you know, I had breakfast this morning and I'm hungry again at lunch. And you're putting plants in there that are sucking the nutrients out of the soil. You have to feed the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're buying soil in from someplace, it's just soil that needs to be amended with organic matter. I mean, I don't know any place where you can buy soil that is complete with compost and is really healthy. So whatever you're getting, amend that soil and build the organic nutrients in it and feed it. It's hungry.
It is hungry.
And it'll make a huge difference in your garden, just like you with the rabbit manure. And all manures are not created equal. So.
Right.
That's true.
Good point.
Yeah.
Rabbit is the top.
Yes, it's cool manure. So you can put it directly in your garden. It can even come into contact with your plants, and it's not going to harm them. Other manures, like chicken manure, is really hot and has to be composted.
Mm-hmm. Goat manure is a good one, too. Yes. But you also have to be... I think it's funny that we're talking about manure on the radio, but you also you also have to be aware that depending on if the, like for a goat manure being an excellent manure, but if the goats have been kept in a barn and they've been urinating on that manure, it mm-hmm. makes it hotter, so it may have to be composted in some cases. But rabbit is way up there, and goat is way up
alpaca
there.
Alpaca, too. Llama and alpaca. Yeah.
And moose and deer. Anything mm-hmm. that's a pelleted... Oh. Is good poop.
Uh-huh, but horses.
A lot of weed seed in there.
Yeah. Yes.
You gotta compost the heck out of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
It does have some value, though, horse manure?
Oh, sure it does.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Masonite's compost, if you have the time to compost it. That was my situation. I wasn't really in a position to wait 2 years to make some really nice compost, and I didn't want to pay for it, so I got rabbits.
Mm-hmm. Are you putting anything up yet? Have you harvested a... crop yet of anything? No.
I'm barely going.
Oh, that's right.
It's been so cold. Mm-hmm. And like my strawberries are just starting to come on. And normally, you know what's wild is I've had strawberry flowers that have wintered over. And the snow will melt off the flower and it will set a berry like immediately. It's just kind of weird. But I haven't got any strawberries yet this year. We have been mushrooming a lot. So we've been putting up morels and mm-hmm. Corals, experimenting.
We're eating lettuce and spinach, and the rhubarb, of course, is on. But I freeze some, but not much. I'm not.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we have a massive amount of rhubarb from the years that we were selling it to farmers market and with our CSAs, but I don't use it much.
I have a friend who makes juice, rhubarb juice.
That'd be sour.
Yeah, sure.
And this is my first year really trying a lot of different rhubarb stuff, and my plants are just getting really going, but I did just do some jam. I totally forgot about
that.
Good. Strawberry rhubarb jam.
Good. And I learned from my mom, you pull it, you don't cut it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
It encourages the plant to produce more
like
shoots.
We were talking, every year you learn something.
Oh, absolutely.
A bunch of things.
There's always more to learn. And the more I know I don't know.
Exactly.
That's what makes it so fun.
Yes.
It's an ongoing science experiment.
And that was actually why I entered the Master Gardener program, was just for my personal edification, because North Idaho, as we all know, is a very challenging and ever-changing climate. And the Extension has a lot of growing information that's really great for home gardeners. They have a whole library of publications, and... I learned a lot from the program, but I also made a lot of connections locally, and I get to do really fun events like the Natural Connections event. The library is a great resource, too.
Yes.
And it's an opportunity to rub elbows with fellow gardeners.
Absolutely. And share knowledge.
But I think, you know, I've been teaching the organic gardening portion of the Master Gardener program for 25 years. I actually developed it for the Master Gardener program, but... back to what we were talking about, one of the things that I tell my students for growing in this challenging weather environment that we have, which is always changing, to grow a healthy, successful garden in North Idaho, always plan for the coldest, hottest, wettest, coldest on recorded history. And you're ready to grow in North Idaho. I mean, plan for everything, use season extension, and know that it's ever changing. And every single year, we find ourselves with almost 40 years of gardening here. Every year, I'm saying, I have never seen that happen before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a given. I mean, the more you know, the more you know you don't know, and you just have to adjust and adapt to things as climate change happens and different things happen, and that's a part of observing nature and knowing that nature adapts to whatever happens, and we have to learn to do that too. And that's important, to be making clear observations of what's happening in your garden and making notes about that. That's why a garden journal is important, because your specific growing environment where your garden is, whether it's in town, in Kokalala, north of town, Bonner's Ferry, wherever you are, it's unique to your location, and that's where keeping a garden journal and tracking that information is really important, so you can reflect back on that.
using those tools too, the thermometer, the cover, you know, mm-hmm. trying to extend your seasons, you know, just being aware of all these other things that you can do to enhance your garden.
And talking to your neighbors and fellow gardeners. I mean, people, your neighbors know what's going on, but also, I mean, our neighbors across the road frost 3 weeks before we do. So it's still, even though they're my neighbors, they have a different growing and climate and environment, and that's why it's important that you do that garden journaling and really pay attention.
Yeah, even if it's just a plain little notebook, you should mm-hmm. you should take notes every year on what happens, because if you think you remember, you're wrong.
Right? I can't even remember where I planted something. Oh, yeah, there's that lily.
Yeah, garden maps, and even if you end up writing it on a calendar, something.
Yes.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
to be able to look, I mean, we can look back to 1986 on our record keeping. Of course, we're certified organic, so we have to keep a lot of records anyways, but it's a really beneficial thing for any home gardener to do.
Good. Very good advice. Now to the sad part, what's happening for pests? Have you had a pest infestation yet?
We put out, one thing I did differently this year, like in the high tunnel, we always get flea beetles. That's a given that we're going to have flea beetles in there. So this year, before I even transplanted out there, I put yellow sticky traps out and have been catching the immature flea beetles. But we had a little bit of aphids happening in the greenhouse, and that's kind of a common thing. I mean, you think about aphids are probably one of the biggest pests that most gardeners have because they're born pregnant. And even born pregnant, the immature embryo inside an aphid is also pregnant. So aphids are a problem. I mean, I it's hard to believe, but look it up. It's true.
You told me one time, Diana, that Bonner County has more types of aphids than any place else in the world.
I think so.
I agree with that.
Or every color of aphid, too. It's yeah, so in every color.
There's a lot of species diversity here. And one of our pests that we ended up with is wireworms. Some years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, we experimented with no-till, and it ended up bringing in a population explosion of wireworms. And we ended up doing an on-farm research project with a graduate student from U of I and learned a lot about that. And we've been using pheromone trapping to catch the adults. So there's always pests out there going for that. And that's why it's really important when you're planting your garden that you're integrating a lot of flowers to encourage the beneficial insects in there. We always plant flowers throughout the garden for that. And we use a lot of companion planting, a lot of different things to mm-hmm. deter some of those pests, and but you know, you're going to have pests if you're going to do it organically. That's mm-hmm. that's a given. So you need to be proactive with how you're growing and how you put different plants together.
I do a lot of trap cropping, and that seems like it's been relatively effective in my space because I do. It seems like we haven't had hardly any sunny weather in the last few weeks, and it'll be mostly overcast. And I'm looking around, picking grasshoppers and slugs off of stuff. I've had slugs for the first time this year. Never
had
them.
You have grasshoppers already. Wow.
Yes. Oh, my. Yeah. Grasshoppers are terrible. But, like, it'll be overcast, right? Be walking around the garden, picking stuff off. Won't see any aphids. And then, like, a cloud will clear, and I'll look at a rose bush, and it'll just be covered.
Oh,
just crawling. It's so weird. I do have some BT that I picked up that I'm going to spray the BT this year, which is a
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yes, and it's an organic type of pest control.
Insecticide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So because I garden organically as well. And it can be a struggle.
The things we do is the first thing I do is just a hard spray.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, if it can take it. A hard spray and then hand picking is a big,
yeah,
it's
mean
the
a,
murder
a
season.
Hard spray with water.
Water.
Yes, hard spray with water. We got our cherry tree is, as I said, cherries mm-hmm. have really taken a hit and it's a mess. So we've been trying to spray that and then the neem oil and then the hard spray. And
the big thing about using neem oil is that it will kill beneficials. So you want to be really
good.
Cautious with using
okay.
that while it is organically approved, it ideally you want to use neem oil on things that are not flowering, because that's the beneficials are on the flowering things, if that's possible.
Sure.
So you might want to consider using something a little...
Thank you, Diane. That's a good point.
I haven't had great luck with neem oil for anything, just for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody's situation is different.
Do you use any kind of oil?
Not at this point anymore, mm-hmm. because I just found that it wasn't working and it was just a waste of money and time. Mm-hmm. So I do the same thing. I'll spray them with water and I'll pick them off. And sometimes if I've got broccoli that's really super eaten up, instead of pulling that broccoli out because I'm sick of looking at it, it makes me sad, I'll leave it there, mm-hmm. because those pests, whatever is getting at it, are not going to bother my Brussels sprouts that I have over here that need to make it through the season in order to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So
you leave the plant that's kind of trap the host,
crop.
The trap crop.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, trap cropping is something that's been around for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. I think it was one of the first pest control opportunities there. But there's a lot of different pests, but and we're finding with warmer climate, we're getting new pests, but at the same time, we're getting new beneficials. Like, we have more praying mantises than we've ever seen before.
I saw a few last summer in my mm-hmm. garden. I'd never seen them before.
So they're great for grasshopper control. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're not even going to go to a song break because we are so into this right now. We're going to move on to the fun part.
That's what happens when gardeners get together, right?
I know. I'm thinking we should do another show. You guys are here. Okay, now for the fun part. Diving deep into you two gardeners. We've got Diane Green, who's a veteran gardener, 40-plus years, and Elizabeth Struby, who is our younger gardener, but still on her way to being a seasoned pro, too. Why is it that you're both compelled to share your knowledge of gardening, other than just talking about it? Why do you share?
Well, it has been said that knowledge is like compost. If you don't spread it around, it's not going to do any good. So I've been an educator working as an advisor through the Small Farms Program and gardening programs through University of Idaho, and I've been working with Oregon State for the last couple of years, and I think sharing what I know and helping people grow gardens and helping people be more successful as small acreage farmers is important for the planet. It's important for the community. I think it's important for people to grow food, and I will do whatever I can to contribute to that succession and that success of other people's gardens and knowledge with that. So
great.
Spreading the compost around.
Yeah. Awesome.
And I have kind of a similar answer because I am largely self-taught. I'm only a generation removed from the homesteaders in my family. My parents were really the first generation that didn't have milk cows as adults, and we had small gardens, but we didn't really have a lot going on. And I had, in getting back to that movement, I did a lot of reading and watching YouTube and self-teaching. And if it weren't for those resources that I drew on from other people who shared that information, I wouldn't be where I am today with the information that I have. And I think gardeners, as a general rule, are really good sharers.
Yes.
There's and
no secrets amongst
no,
us.
It's just fun. and I like to, not just with gardening, but with the other things that I experiment with and that I'm getting into on the homestead. That was why I got into my website and writing my blog and sharing my recipes. And I want to kind of pay that back, pay it forward.
That's great. Me too. That's why I have this show. I think it's important that people can take care of themselves. You know, if they can grow food and keep it through the winter, they can take care of themselves.
And it just tickles you pink anyway.
It does.
It's so much fun.
It's such a great secret in the cupboard.
Yes.
And it's an opportunity to live more sustainably. And if you're growing your garden and thinking about it, growing it in a sustainable way, meaning that you're not spending thousands of dollars with seed saving and growing, building your own compost and having worm bins and doing different things, that's important. And that sustainability that you can make a difference on your own little piece of ground, whether it's a backyard garden or an acre or 2 acre garden. Every little bit makes a difference. And I think collectively the gardeners are they just rock.
Or maybe going to save the world.
Well, that would be nice.
It might happen.
Wouldn't that be something? Let's talk about threats to the garden. What is it that you see that's a threat to the garden, to gardening or the health of the soil or your garden specifically? Do you have any threats, Diane?
Threats? I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, there's always...
I heard about the bear.
Oh, the bear. Maybe it's time for the bear story, Diane.
Oh.
Diane's got a bear story she needs to share.
That was a threat. Well, I mean, we have been gardening here for a long time, and where our farm is, there's 350 acres of private roadless behind us and 350 acres of wildlife management in front of us, so we're right in the middle of a corridor of wildlife. And we've had black bears get into the corn and black bears get into the chickens on and off over the years. And a couple years ago, a black bear got into our corn patch like 3 days before harvest, which was really devastating. And Fish and Game came over and identified it as a black bear by the prints that we found. And so they brought a live trap and set up a live trap just outside our garden, a bear, one of those big bear culverts. And a couple days went by and we caught a bear, and we were so happy that we had caught him. We went down there and got a closer look, and we caught a grizzly bear.
Oh.
And it really offered a new perspective. I mean, we're on Rapid Lightning just a quarter mile past the Pack River store, and Fish and Game said it was the first time they had actually trapped a grizzly in the area, and it was pretty exciting to see it up close and personal. But I have to say it has changed our perspective of a lot of things, because my husband and I both worked in the woods in our youth, so we're pretty experienced with wildlife interface. But a grizzly bear is a different animal for sure than a black bear. But they ended up tagging him and sedating him and taking him to putting a GPS collar on him and taking him somewhere up towards Glacier, and he was back in 10 days. Oh. And I find it just remarkable that these animals can find their way back to where they came from with no... He wasn't using GPS to find his way home, but he found his way back, and it's given us a whole different perspective. So now our acre garden is... we have an electric fence around it, and thanks to some help from Fish and Game and some funding and labor, but it when I do a natural pest control workshop on the farm, and we include bears as a part of our natural pest control. it certainly gives perspective, that's for sure. So electric fencing is really the only way you can keep bears away.
Wow. It must be some pretty good corn.
I was thinking the same thing. He's got to have like some Yogi Bear relation and, going on in there.
And well, that was the black bear ate the corn. It wasn't the grizzly bear.
We actually that's funny.
They put they baited the trap with some of our corn a couple days and nothing happened. So Fish and Game brought some carrot cake. That's what we caught the grizzly bear with. And I can't say when they put the carrot cake in the trap, my husband was there helping them bait the trap. And he was like, well, can't we have a piece of cake before we do that? Make sure it's okay. So no, we caught the grizzly bear with carrot cake. The black bear ate probably 1,000 ears of corn in one night.
Oh.
I mean, it devastated our entire corn crop. He was very fat and happy when he left.
Oh, man.
So now it's electrified.
That is a crazy story.
It's always something. You can always count on that. And it's always something that we can say, I've never seen that before, again and again. Oh, I've never seen that before.
Yep. And
all this work, all this gardening, you know how much time it takes. Finally, how is it that you love your garden? I mean, what do you do in your garden to love it? Do you have certain routines or?
It's really easy for me because I have a 4-year-old boy and he requires outdoor time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when he first started walking, like he was barely walking. And I would take him inside. I say, you know, it's for lunch. We need to have a snack. I need to put him down for a nap. He wasn't even talking yet. And he would just scream and hang on to the door jamb because he didn't want to go back in the house. So that's what I'm looking at. If it's above freezing, we're outside.
Uh-huh.
And it's just part of our morning routine. We take care of the animals and we go straight out to the garden and just tootle around. And mm-hmm. he has his own garden bed. He has had his own raised bed since he was 2. And this year, he started an entire flat of his own seeds, and he labeled them, and
wow.
he planted the seeds, and he now has a flat of tomatoes and peppers and flowers and basil and everything that he grew himself to put out in the garden. And that's, I am a huge, huge fan of gardening with kids. I think it's
absolutely.
Important for kids, and that's a niche that I really want to explore with Jen over at the UI and possibly offering some classes for parents and how to help your kids garden and garden well and give parents resources, but also maybe do some kids gardening activities.
We're doing our pumpkin project.
I was going to ask about the pumpkin project.
Tomorrow the kids are coming out to transplant pumpkins. We've been doing that for 25 years. It's really important to start with the children, absolutely. But to answer that question about how do you make time to love your garden. I mean,
yes.
What's not to love? But I wanted to say that gardening is certainly a labor of love, and it's important that it's not a love of labor.
Oh.
And I think as we've come into our 70s really thinking about what we're doing and really taking the time to simply pause when I'm out there in the garden and sit quietly and observe what's going on around me, not just be down there working. I got to get this weeded. I got to get this planted, but pause for the cause and sit quietly and take time to make a closer look at what you've created and acknowledge that nature is a magnificent partner and take time to appreciate all that you've accomplished and know that it's perfect in its imperfections. There's a Japanese term called wabi-sabi, and it's about the perfection of imperfection. And that means that, yeah, there's always going to be weeds. There's always going to be more to do. And know that that's okay. I mean, there's always tomorrow, but you need to appreciate what you've accomplished. And when you go to other people's gardens, appreciate the time that they've invested in that. Don't look at the weeds. Look at the beautiful garden.
Yes.
And not everything has to be a success for it to be an enjoyable and a valuable experience. And I think one of the stories that gardeners enjoy sharing most are our most dire failures.
Well, that's what you remember.
Yes.
You know, you don't remember your successes. You remember your failures. That's human nature. But yes, the enjoyment and looking through the kids' eyes is a neat way to think about it too, is that childlike.
Oh my gosh. We work with the kindergarten class and they, I go into the kindergarten class. I went in 3 weeks ago and the kids planted pumpkins and then they bring them out and transplant them tomorrow. I always ask the children, where does your food come from? And they'll list grocery stores. And the goal is to get them thinking about the fact that everything came from a seed and everything came from a farmer. And it's wonderful to see their eyes open wide and create a passion for food
and gardening.
A passion
for knowledge, too.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Instill the hunger for learning in people, because gardening is a great way to do that. I have a funny story about that. It's really short. My son, when he was 3, we were at the View restaurant in Kokolala, and we didn't eat out all that much. He was born literally 2 weeks before the entire country went on lockdown.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it was wild. And so we didn't do a lot of eating out for the first couple years of his life. And we get our milk from a wonderful lady in our neighborhood. So we get fresh milk every week. And we go see the cow, and it's like, it's just a normal part of our life, right? And we go to the View, and he asks me for milk. And I was like, yeah, you can have some milk, sure. And he says, where's their cow? Because we're at the restaurant. I said, oh, their cow is somewhere else on the farm. And he said, oh, okay. I said, they get it from a farm somewhere else. And then he gets his breakfast, and he's eating his eggs, and he looks at me, and he says, Mommy, do they have chickens? And it was just so funny that, you know, if I feel like I've succeeded at one thing, it's teaching my son the origins of food.
Right.
It's such a wonderful thing to watch.
That's important.
In children.
That is. And his reality is so much different than many other children.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's just fun. They enjoy it so much.
Sure.
He helps me muck the rabbit barn. And like, that's hard work, right?
Yes,
he just
yes.
enjoys it so much. It's so cool.
That's terrific. Okay, so we got to kind of move to a conclusion here because we are running out of time. I've never done an interview for this long, and it's just so great, you girls. Okay, so Diane, let us know what's happening at Green Tree Naturals the rest of the summer. Or where can they go to find out what's happening?
Well, our greentreenaturals.com. But we'll be planting through June, and in the first Thursday in July, we open up our on-farm stand, which will be open on Thursdays 3 to 5:30, starting July, August, September, and that's pretty much what we target for. I've still got our on-farm organic gardening workshop series are still in process. I have a few more of those going on, and so it's planting, weeding, growing,
picking,
harvesting, teaching.
And Elizabeth, what do you have planned for the rest of the summer?
Well, so I'm hoping, based on my early results from my soil amendment, that this is going to be just a banner year for produce, because I do have the goal of producing food. I have my garden is a subsistence garden. So where I have over a dozen rabbits that are going to have to be butchered in the next few months. We're doing turkeys. We have the garden. And just learning everything I can about all that stuff, volunteering some more with Master Gardening, and then kind of detailing my experiences on my website. I run a little blog.
What's the address for that?
It's called The Whistling Rooster Homestead.
Okay.
We used to have a rooster that whistled. And he's no longer with us. He was a mean old guy. But he kind of inspired the name. So I just have a little blog. I share recipes. I'm an avid home cook, and I'm a sourdough baker. And I homeschool our son. So it's just country living and what I can share about that experience.
Are you you said you were going down to the homesteading?
Yes. I'm really excited about that, actually. This is the second annual homesteading convention it's modern homesteading convention. It's being held in Coeur d'Alene, and I will be volunteering there this year, as well as attending and taking the workshop classes. Posting about that too, because there's so much to learn.
Gosh, there is so much to learn, and it looks like I need to learn that. We're going to run out of time here. So thank you so much for you gals coming in and sharing all your information. Diane Green, Green Tree Naturals, and Elizabeth Struby at Whistling Rooster Homestead.